Welcome to Words with Jam. Our first podcast of the new year is the opening chapter of Pete Morin's legal thriller Diary of a Small Fish, read by the author. Whoever knew that playing golf could be a federal crime?
Chapter 1. Unexpected Company, Muckraking, and Junk Mail. I used to play an obscene amount of golf at the exclusive Hyannis Port Club. I knew at the time it was irresponsible and overindulgent, but I never thought it was a federal crime. At the beginning of a perfectly glorious Labor Day weekend, I sat on the back deck of my coteau at home, cleaning my pings, preparing for the typical holiday Friday afternoon. 18 holes, a few martinis, and a well-aged New York strip. Life was good. Then the doorbell rang. When I opened the door, a massive United States Marshal glared at me with a stone face. He wore a black suit with a badge the size of a pastrami sandwich. His jacket was pulled back on the side to display a gun on his hip. "Paul B. Forte," he said in a gravelly voice, deep and mean. I felt the skin of my face go cold. "Yes?" He reached inside his suit coat and withdrew a piece of paper. "You are hereby served." He shoved a paper into my chest. Stunned, I took the document. "Have a nice day," he said. He turned, marched to the black sedan idling in the driveway and got in. I watched as it roared backward into the street, slinging white clamshells onto my lawn, shifted into drive, and squealed rubber. My throat fought to swallow, but it was dry as gin. "Thank you," I croaked. I looked down at the document, quaking in my hand. It was folded in thirds, the outside with large block letters. United States District Court, District of Massachusetts, subpoena to testify before a grand jury. Subpoena. I sat on my front step, stared at the heading for a minute or so until I mustered the courage to open it. "To Paul B. Forte, 300 Ocean Avenue, Catuit, Massachusetts. You are hereby commanded to appear in this United States District Court at 1 Post Office Square, Boston, Massachusetts, on Thursday, September 30th, 2003, at 1:30 in the afternoon, to give evidence in the matter of United States of America versus Raymond L. Stackhouse. If you fail to appear, a warrant may issue for your arrest." My friend, my golf buddy, the target of indictment, and I a witness against him. I stared at the words as they swam around on the page. Shit! If what Ray had done was a crime, could I be charged too? Should I testify? What about the Fifth? Would my answers to their questions incriminate me? What was the crime in playing golf, for Christ's sakes? I needed to hire a good criminal lawyer, and fast. I struggled to my feet, my knees, my whole body wobbled as I stumbled through the house back to the deck where my clubs leaned against the railing, all in a nice, neat row and glistening in the sun. I remembered the first time I walked the fairway of the local municipal course with Dad and Mom. Dad explained how golf was a game of honor, and I must know the rules and play by them. I thought I'd done that. In golf and everything else. I walked to the railing, leaned against it, and threw up on the azalea below. How did it ever come to this? The Hyannis Port Club is a breathtaking oceanside masterpiece overlooking Nantucket Sound, just up the hill from the famous Kennedy compound. That might sound like an ad for the place, but they're not the type to advertise. They much prefer their well-kept secret. My membership made me very popular on Beacon Hill, at the time at least. I'd hosted senators, fellow representatives, trade association, council, lobbyists, practically anyone else who asked. They were all astonished by the panoramic ocean views and the pristine condition of the course. Who wouldn't be? But what really attracted them most was its connection to the whole Camelot thing. Jack Kennedy had played here. The resilient Kennedy mystique coursed through the place. Fame and power. I was far from a person of fame or power, but I had a knack for golf, joke-telling, and holding my liquor, all traits I had inherited from my father. I also had a knack for slicing my tee shot on 18 into Arnold Schwarzenegger's tennis court. That always cracked them up. Ray was one of my regular guests, a real class act, a generous man, and the chief legislative counsel for the Providential Bank Holding Company. Coincidentally, I've been a member of the Massachusetts House of Representatives, so let's just say that Ray's generosity to me was subject to misinterpretation. I wouldn't expect robust debate on that. But it couldn't possibly be a federal crime, could it? At 5 o'clock the morning after a sleepless night, I stood in shorts and flip-flops at the end of my driveway, reading the dew-dampened front page of the Boston Globe. Grand jury investigates lobbyist gifts to Pauls. Providential records show extensive gifts to bevy of reps. Boston. While the Providential Bank Holding Company was busy fighting for legislative approval to enter into life insurance and financial services businesses, its lobbyist Raymond L. Stackhouse was spending lavishly on gifts for a long list of state legislators. The favors included rounds of golf, expensive dinners, and eye-popping bar tabs at some of the poshest resorts and private golf clubs in the United States. Expense records provided to the Globe by Providential officials show that Stackhouse spent nearly $150,000 over a 3-year period on rounds of golf at Innisbrook Golf Resort in Florida, Casa de Campo in the Dominican Republic, Doral Resort in Miami, Pebble Beach in California, and the Hyannisport Club on Cape Cod. The poshest private golf clubs? Hyannisport? That just wasn't fair. Sure, it's a spectacular course and the food's better than average. Yes, there was the Kennedy connection and the Shrivers and now Schwarzenegger. Granted, technically it was still owned by Mayflower descendants. Hyannisport Village was thick with old money and locked jaws. But still, I joined the place for $250 and half the members were tradesmen. If they let me in for that kind of chump change, how posh could it be? God, I hated the press. And experience told me they were just getting started. I finished the story and threw the paper in the trash, a practice I started when I was married to Kate to protect her peace of mind. I had pretty thick skin about a bad story. It came with the territory. But she was a worrier. She used to lose sleep over a bad news article. She felt the scowls of people in the supermarket. There goes the poor wife of that political hack, they must have thought. It's not like she actually came to see it like them, she assured me, but she really came apart when she saw that picture of me and Ralph Michaels on the 17th hole at Casa del Sol Golf Club on the front page of the Herald. Ralph was another golf nut who Ray had introduced me to, the lobbyist for the Massachusetts Bankers Association. Those telephoto shots across all that open territory were very grainy. They made me look like a gangster, especially with the sunglasses and the cigar. That story got the snowball rolling, but none of us were too worried about it. It was just a goddamn game of golf. or maybe more than my skin was thick. Now the snowball was an avalanche. It was already 5:30, and I had to get to my office in Boston. As the general counsel of the MBTA, Greater Boston's public transportation system, I had a little game going with my rivals about who gets to the office first and leaves last. It wasn't a friendly game either, but I was ahead and intent on keeping it that way, even if I was sleepwalking and struggling not to puke. During the ride to Boston, I tried to concentrate on the positive side of things. Christ, it could have been me. If I'd been appointed banking commissioner as the governor originally planned, I'd be indicted myself. It's pretty sick that a man's freedom could depend on his job title, but that is the nature of politics. And at that moment, I was reminded how much politics sucked. After a week or two, my sleep improved, although my appetite wasn't what it had been. The sudden, fleeting panic attacks came less frequently. I thought through my situation and felt a weak confidence that this whole thing wasn't as big as I'd feared. I kept thinking of Dad's words and telling myself, "You can't get in trouble for following the rules." I also focused on my work, and that helped. At least I began to get some of my sense of humor back. Then I received a certified letter from the Massachusetts State Ethics Commission. It began, "You are hereby notified," which is never a good start. It informed me that I was the subject of an investigation regarding the unlawful receipt of lobbyist gifts and the failure to report them. The letter contained a subpoena summoning me to be deposed the following October 7th and commanding me to produce a list of 7 described categories of documents, each one of which began with the words, "any and all." Any and all documents evidencing communications between you and Raymond L. Stackhouse, for instance. This is why people hate lawyers. What the hell does "any and all" mean? Doesn't either word cover it? This kind of excessive lawyering drove Dad berserk. I wondered what he'd say to me now. I made a bunch of calls around the State House and was relieved to learn that I was nothing special. Dozens of others got the same letter with the same subpoena for the same itemized list of documents. Aha, I thought. But did you guys get a grand jury subpoena? I hoped my gallows humor would come in handy.